Olmaz. for them to measure the interventions and programs of the public sector to make sure that there's actually an impact on public service delivery. When it comes to the CVPs, the constitutional values and principles, an important value and principle is the fact that the PSC needs to make sure that public servants have a high level of professional ethics and adhere to the highest professional values of the Constitution. There needs to be effective management of resources. There needs to be fairness, equity, non-partisan, non-biased compliance to the Constitution and those types of constitutional values. Also include making sure that the representativity of the public service, and in particular when it comes to addressing the imbalances of the parts, and also they need to make sure that the effective human resource management and career development practices in the public service. So I've just mentioned to you the function of the Public Service Commission, as well as what the constitutional values and principles of the Public Service Commission as enshrined in Chapter 10 of the Constitution, in particular looking at Section 185 and 196 of the Constitution.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and also Ms. Makubele. I wanted to prove to you that Mela and the Kubele, because today is a new day. Not really, because in your introduction, ma'am, you said we might be familiar with you. This is a different separate leg of interview, it has nothing to do with the past.
Okay,
so I was moving from that and I thought that.
That's fine, I'll answer that. I apologize.
Thank you very much. Having said that, and also taking the cue when you're introducing yourself and also responding to the chair's question and my apology, my name is Soma, member of the Board for me too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The public service functions as you alluded to, but just to be crispy and direct now, I'm just making that statement and the question. The public service functions aimed at, among other, to promote the values and principles governing the public administration in this way, and to give directions aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures comply with the principles. In your own words, ma'am, is the Public Service Commission making an impact in the public service? And how can the public service reposition itself to make an impact given its wider mandate of promoting values and principles governing public service administration?
Okay, the second one, ma'am.
I should have warned you that I would have two legs.
Okay.
The second one, which would be my last one for me, is that constitutionally, do you think a spouse and children of the political representatives, if you say politically, you might use the word public representatives, and former members should be prevented from doing business with the state, provide marriage for your answer and provide a solution thereof. Thank you very much, and thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable MP. So I think when it comes to public service commission, I think so the public service commission has made attempts. If I go through the website of public service commission, there's been a lot of webinars around resource management in the environment of procurement and complexity. They now have a guide of the constitutional values and principles, which guides basically the values and principles that govern public service administration. There's been a lot of webinars and dialogues, even with as the SA and the EU dialogue on values-driven public sector reforms. So there's a lot of dialogue. So I think the Public Service Commission has done a good job at instigating dialogue around the responsibilities of public servants in as far as aligning themselves and giving effect to constitutional values and principles. But the truth is that the public sector basically has a culture of patronage, a culture of corruption, a culture of nepotism that still is plaguing basically the public whole. The poor coordination between national, provincial, and the local government level, in terms of the different spheres of government. And so because it's like a fungus, it's like a cancer. Nepotism, patronage, political interference, and corruption are the fungus that currently are undermining the efforts the Public Service Commission has attempted in order for them to transform the public service environment as a whole. So I think that what needs to happen now is a culture of intolerance to corruption, nepotism, patronage, and there needs to be a culture of consequence management within the public sector as a whole. And I think the Public Service Commission, because it's got a limitation on its mandate, is largely advisory and oversight. It doesn't have an implementation mandate. We need to make sure that we come as Parliament to extend the mandate of the Public Service Commission so that it includes issues of even advising on issues of prosecution, so that the culture of consequence management in the public sector is felt most wholeheartedly. We need to introduce watchdogs over corruption in the public service. We need to introduce policies for whistleblowing in the public service. We need to introduce champions of anti-corruption in the public service, contracts and pledges, so that people can commit to not only just signing their performance agreements, but can commit themselves to making sure that they adhere to the requirements, the constitutional requirements of their public service duties as a whole. So I think there's so much more that the Public Service Commission could do to try to deal with issues of especially instability between the political and the administrative, and making sure that the separation between the political principles and administrators of the public service. But that can only happen if you extend the mandate of the Public Service Commission to include issues of implementation and imposing intervention to transform the values of public service as a whole. But most importantly is the issue of consequence management. When it comes to the issue of political representatives, and basically should they be doing business with the state, I believe that the cooling off period is necessary for any person who has worked in the state or is a politician or a political representative of the state when it comes to doing business with the state. And that's because of the power relationships that currently exist between politicians and administrators, especially with those who are in the supply chain management environment. So the power relationship is unequal and uneven, and because of the experience of in the public service as politicians, this could give rise to increased corruption, increased nepotism, and increased patronage. So I do agree that if you're working for government or if you're a politician in the country, you shouldn't be doing business with the state because of the negative consequences that will come with your involvement over the supply chain management component. So I definitely agree to a cooling off period.
Thank you, Miss Colomba. Zuki from Colomba.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, my first question is a two-in-one, but I'm also going to ask you my second question.
Okay.
Yes.
I
am a Miriam Kibi, a member of the panel. I thank you. The Constitution directs the public service to be professional, accountable, and develop orientated, and the NDP further amplifies this constitutional directive by identifying specific steps that need to promote the value and principles across public administration. Now my question is, what is your understanding on the vision of professionalizing the public administration in the country? In your response, could you please distinguish between cadre deployment based on the meritocracy and mediocrity into the public administration? My second question on is part two of my first question. What could be the role of the Public Service Commission in ensuring professionalization of the public administration is institutionalized? Now, I'm moving over to my second question. Maladministration and corruption are cancers so ingrained in the public service has become the new normal, and it's impacting negatively on the development in this country. Now my question is, what causes corruption and how can the PSC play a meaningful role in preventing, reducing and curbing corrupt practices in the public service? Can you also please indicate current weakness in the system and propose your solution in your response? I thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am, our honorable MP. When it comes to my understanding of what it means to professionalize the state, basically for me what it means is that you recruit people who are competent, who have high levels of skills, with high levels of experience, and with the prerequisite qualifications that will ensure that they can deliver on the delivery of the mandate of their roles within the public service. So it also includes issues of code of conduct and the attitude that the civil servants or the public service will have, and also with respect to do with intention when it comes to basically being committed to the social good. So the professionalization of the state has to do with meritocratic recruitment, making sure that you've got the best people, the most talented public servants with the right attitude, committed to the social good and service delivery objectives and mandates of government. And that's the means to professionalize the state. It also means that you have an equal opportunity environment whereby, irregardless of the sex, gender, race, sexuality, and other characteristics, if you are the right candidate for a job based on competencies and based on qualifications and experience, then there should be usually the person who is chosen, as opposed to those who have political alliances and political loyalties. So that's what it means to professionalize the state. In as far as candidate deployment is involved, the merit based candidate deployment has to do with not only choosing people who are politically aligned to you when it comes to political participation in the party, but also to making sure that the people that are deployed by ministers or politicians into strategic roles in government, they also have the capacities, the competences, the prerequisite qualifications, and the prerequisite experience to make sure that they're able to deliver on the duties and the roles that they've been deployed to. So the difference for me is the meritocratic is merit-based. It's based on merit as well as a political loyalties. And then the mediocrity, what it's to do with reckless candidate deployment, whereby political parties are deploying you to strategic roles irregardless of their capacities and competencies. In terms of what is the role of the public service in institutionalizing the professionalization of the public service, so I think basically having a code of conduct that is implemented, and you make sure that there's consequence management when there's been interventions of the code of conduct of the public service, in particular the Matopele principles and the Matopele framework. So there must be a consequence management and dealing with effectively with corruption, nepotism, patronage, and reckless candidate deployment. So you need to ensure that the code of conduct is used to disincentivize bad behavior and to incentivize good behavior, good attitudes within the state, especially when it comes to issues of recruitment. Also, I think the public service can play an important role by being involved in the recruitment of SNS members, but obviously with making sure that they recruit together with the head, the administrative head of the public service, that would be located either in the presidency or located in the Department of Public Service and Administration. So they will be more involved through the recruitment process. They will be involved by developing an effective code of conduct for the public service, by making sure that there are campaigns in the public service and workshops that speaks to issues of constitutional alignment to the values of the Constitution, and by making sure that the also when dealing with professionalization, making sure that the effective training programs that will bring awareness to the public servants themselves on their role as public servants and how they are to make sure that they are competent professionals with the right attitude committed to the social good in the state. So that's how I feel that the Public Service Commission could play a bigger role, but we have to extend the mandate to involve implementation and for them to provide measures for interventions, pragmatic interventions that will make sure that the public service is transformed and is professionalized. Then you ask, what is the cause of corruption? So the cause of corruption, to be honest, is a values-driven issue. It's to do with greed by humanity and having a disregard for the resources of the state and having a disregard for the people to whom the state is mandated to serve. So when you're someone who is selfish, greedy, not people-centric, and you're all about your own upward mobility, regardless of how you get there, you want to acquire wealth despite the cost of the process you take to acquire wealth, that is the cause of corruption. So it's a value-driven cause that causes people to be corrupt. And also, it's also systematic, right? If you don't have the right interventions in place, the right institutions and the right systems in place that will prevent corruption, curb corruption and prevent corruption in the state, then you develop systematic and institutional weaknesses and an instability of leadership and instability of the systems themselves. That's why corruption will breed in the state, and that's how you won't be able to address issues of corruption, because of systemic weaknesses and institutional weaknesses when it comes to state capacity and state leadership of the state. And then, what was the last question again?
Okay.
The last question? Oh, okay. Awesome. Yes.
Thank you.
Bonga Chaplin and welcome Kosazana Zongiswa, Honorable Sibisi Mzwakhe, a member of the subcommittee. Like my colleagues, I would have two questions. Professionalization of the public service can happen as a function of the meritocracy, which is a system of appointing or promoting staff based on the knowledge and skills. Now the question would be, as a commissioner of the Public Service Commission, how would you advise government departments to institutionalize meritocratic ethos in the administration of the state in order to achieve professional public service? That was question number one. Now I'm taking question number two. How do you think the Public Service Commission can, one, strengthen its own oversight, and oversight two, and oversight by Parliament?
So how can you institutionalize meritocratic ethos within the public service? So I've already spoken about the interventions that can be introduced to deal with corruption, patronage, and nepotism in the public service. So I'm not going to repeat myself when it comes to that. But I think also the how to institutionalize meritocratic ethos is by having your budgetary principles adhered to, by making sure that you address misbehavior on the part of public service through the culture of consequent management. It's by having code of conduct, it's by having pledges, it's by having champions who will champion the professional ethos and the meritocratic ethos in public service. It's about recruitment, making sure that you recruit the right skills, the right talent, who's got knowledge and experience of public service delivery, and who will be able to fulfill the requirement of the job to which they've been appointed to. And the Public Service Commission can be involved in the recruitment, in particular of senior members of management, together with the administrative head of public service, to make sure that there's a hybrid approach to the recruitment process. An approach that says you have to account to the political principle when it comes to issues of policy, but when it comes to issues of administration and operation, then you account to the administrative head of the public service, which would be located in the presidency or located in the Department of Public Service and Administration. So I think also by having awareness campaigns, workshops, ensuring that you use the performance management tools of the public service to manage the rotten eggs out and to manage people who are highly talented with the right attitudes, who observe professional ethics and the highest standards of professional life within the public service. So I think that the need for us to make sure that we are able to use our performance management tools effectively, and not just as tick boxes, but as tools that are used as levers to basically make sure that we develop the right candidates for senior management roles and the rotten assets are managed out of the system. But all of this has to do with making sure that there's leadership in public service. And if you have a DG that's committed to public service innovations and transformations, and a DG that's committed to public service transformations in particular, that's how you'd be able to make sure that you institutionalize how to professionalize the public service. But meritocratic efforts have to do with recruitment primarily, making sure that you have institutions in place, systems in place, tactics in place that are able to recruit the best talent who are experienced, knowledgeable, qualified to do the job, and you deal with issues of reckless deployment in government.
Did you hear the second question?
The second question is, how do you strengthen the oversight capabilities of the Public Service Commission? So I think for me, the most important thing for me, I think we need to make sure that all decision-making that takes place within the public service and the policy-making processes within the public service are evidence-based. So if you have a compelling research agenda that is based on evidence, looking at the best practice of what other countries are currently doing to make sure that they improve oversight, that is one way that you can improve the oversight capabilities of the Public Service Commission, by making sure that your reporting is evidence-based and it is supported by research, a compelling research agenda that draws from other experiences of other government institutions from across the world, and not just looking at South Africa, but looking at government departments like in the UK, China, Brazil, that are currently doing very well when it comes to the oversight capabilities. So I think having a compelling research agenda will improve the oversight capabilities of the Public Service Commission, in particular to itself when it comes to internal accountability as well as to Parliament. I think when it comes to Parliament, so I think the issue of making sure that the Public Service Commission exercises its constitutional duties without fear or favour. So being honest when it comes to reporting on the status of public service in the country, and also being very open about the negative consequences of political interference and reckless candidate deployment in the processes. So it's a mutual process by which Parliament holds the PSC accountable, as well as the PSC holds Parliament accountable when it comes to issues of political interference and reckless candidate deployment by the leading party formations in Parliament. But I think having a compelling research agenda, extending the mandate of the Public Service Commission to include implementation, as well as making sure that they exercise their roles and responsibility as independent commissioners without fear or favour. That is how we can strengthen the Public Service Commission. But having a culture that is accepting of difference, a culture that is accepting of contradictions, a culture that is accepting of differences, and making sure that honest appraisals and honest assessments of performance are done without fear or favour. That is what will improve the oversight responsibilities and capacities of the Public Service Commission.
The other member who's going to ask is not with us here. He's on the virtual platform.
Okay.
That is Honorable Clark. Honorable Clark, it's your turn now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Michelle Clark, and I'm a member of the subcommittee. My first question is, it is believed that a responsive, ethical and values-driven public service depends on, among other things, the investigative function of the PSC. On public administration, malpractices, particularly in the areas of irregular appointments and curbing of corruption in government departments. How can the PSC strengthen its role of investigation of unethical conducts and play a meaningful role in assisting government to curb corruption in the public administration? That's my first question. My second question is, the power to appoint in South Africa is assigned by Section 3, Subsection 7 of the Public Service Act. Ministers or MECs can delegate the power to officials within the departments. One, what are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and a capable state? And two, what can be the role of the PSC in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants are appointed on appointed based on merit? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Clark. So the question is, in terms of the investigative function of the Public Service Commission, what can you do to make sure that appointments in the public service, so that basically there's proper investigation taking place when it comes to issues of corruption, impetus and patronage in the public service? What is the role of the Public Service Commission? What can it do to improve its investigative capacity? And I think for me, an important part of the investigative function of the Public Service Commission is to ensure that the Public Service Commission actually appoints people who are investigators, people who understand the investigative terrain, either as people who've been involved in prosecutions in the legislative and the legal fraternity. So they need to make sure that the right capacities appointed and recruited by the Public Service Commission to make sure that they're able to fulfill their mandate of being an investigative for public service within the state. So the issue of correct and right recruitment plays an important component, in particular building the capacities of the state through training workshops and other programs. That's how they can improve the investigative function. I also think it's important to have a whistleblower protection policy. So a policy that will protect public servants who actually expose corruption within the state and the unprofessional work ethics and unprofessional conduct within the state. So if you make sure that there's a whistleblowing policy that protects whistleblowers in conjunction with making sure that you popularize and you familiarize public servants of the anti-corruption hotline that currently exists in public service, that's how you'll be able to build the capacities of the Public Service Commission when it comes to the investigative mandate and the investigative function of the Commission. And I think also there's something that needs to be done in terms of the mandate of the Public Service Commission to make sure that it not only advises on issues of persecution, but is also empowered and enabled to prosecute bad behavior and prosecute those who are guilty of fraudulent activities and negative and unethical behaviors within the state. So I also think that mandate plays an important role, especially when it comes to implementation and implementing interventions that will curb corruption, nepotism, and patronage in the public service. So I've mentioned three examples of how you could build the capacities of the Public Service Commission to make sure that they're able to fulfill the investigative functions of the commission. And then you asked, what are some of the obstacles of the recruitment process, and what can the Public Service Commission do to make sure that you address the negative maladministrative practices when it comes to recruitment, and what is the role of the Public Service Commission in addressing unethical practices in the public service? So I think the major obstacle currently that's facing public service is the issue of political interference, whereby the politicians, they unduly influence the administration and the operations of the state without just and require public servants. They're the ones who are involved in determining who gets appointed as the administrative head or as the DG or as a senior manager in the public service. So the issue of political interference is definitely an obstacle when it comes to issues of recruitment in the state. Also think that cadre deployment policies, in particular reckless cadre deployment, is a problem in the state, because cadre deployment that is reckless and not meritocratic based doesn't take into account the needs of the role that is being appointed for and that is being fulfilled. So if you basically recklessly deploy cadres without the prerequisite competencies, experience, qualifications required in order for them to deliver on the job, that is a problem. And you will undermine the efforts that you are trying to introduce to build the state capacity and to deliver service delivery for the citizens of South Africa. And what can the PSC do to make sure that it curbs unethical practices in the state? I've already spoken about the issue of dealing with corruption, nepotism, and patronage. And basically, you need to introduce specific interventions and specific measures and to build the prerequisite institutions that not only advise on issues of prosecution, but also make sure that the people who are found to have contravened on the basic principles of the public service are actually arrested, and there's a consequence management culture within the public service. So I also think that if you were to appoint an administrative head of public service, whereby DGs and other senior managers would be able to report on the administrative components to the administrative head of the public service, and only on policy matters when it comes to principles. That hybrid governance approach would also assist in ensuring that the right people are recruited and that nepotism and patronage do not determine who gets to work as a senior manager or as an administrator or technocrat in the public service. So I do believe that the National Development Plan has specific recommendations for how you can make sure that the only the right people with the right attitudes who are committed to the so good are recruited into public service. And I think the Public Service Commission could basically sing a hymn out of the National Development Plan when it comes to the printing of the plan. You can sing a hymn from the constitutional requirements that are enshrined in Chapter 10 of the Constitution, Section 195 and Section 196, as well as the Public Service Act gives guidance on how to make sure that maladministration and unethical behavior is curbed. So the Public Service Commission is empowered, but you could do much more to extend the mandate of the Public Service Commission as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Rosina Komani, the member of the subcommittee. Having listened to your responses, one is tempted to ask and to state that there's a huge loss of public money due to corruption, especially with public servants doing business with the state. So my question would be, in your own opinion, how could public servants be stopped from doing business with the state, since there is legislation already preventing such practices, yet it is still ongoing? Thank you very much.
So I think the questions are quite similar, and the biggest issue is the issue of corruption, nepotism, and patronage. And I've already spoken about having a cooling off period to make sure that no one is appointed by the state to do business with the state if they work for the state, either as a politician or as a senior manager of government. So making sure that there are policies that reinforce the need for a cooling off period to make sure that there's no abuse of power by people who have the ability to influence the procurement process or the supply chain process because of their involvement in the state. So you need actual specific policy instruments that enforce the cooling off period as part of the contracts of public servants and as part of the contracts of politicians to make sure that they don't do business with the state once they work for the state. So there needs to be a cooling off period. And really, guys, this is really honourable members of parliament. It is about having a developing a culture of consequence management. If there are people who have been found to have done wrong, who have adhered to unethical professional ethics in the workplace, whether it's corruption, greed, and who are basically have broken the law, it's not good enough to give the golden handshake. But you actually have a culture of consequence management, whereby you deliver this, the people who are involved in wrongdoing to the stage of prosecution by the legal fraternity. I've already spoken about introducing the whistleblower policy that protects whistleblowers who expose people who are doing wrong in the state. I've already spoken about the watchdog that not only advises on prosecution, but has the capacity and is empowered to implement prosecutions after investigations have found that people have been involved in wrongdoing. I've already spoken about the champions, the public servants who are champions of anti-corruption in the state need to be appointed. There needs to be a pledge in the contracts and values inscribed in the contract of public servants to make sure that they are champions of an anti-corrupt and a zero tolerance culture within public service. Also, I've spoken about the campaign in public service and the workshops, the training workshops that basically make sure that public servants are familiar with their constitutional mandates when it comes to professional and ethical behavior. But the most important thing is making sure that those who get caught get punished and are not given the golden handshakes by politicians to own the single convenience. So let's develop a culture of tolerance, anti-tolerance, that has zero tolerance to corruption, and make sure that there are consequences to every action, in particular for the bad, rotten apples within the public service.
Ms. Mkomoloma, is there anything you want to ask?
So the Honourable Member of Parliament intimidated me earlier in her remarks when she said that this is a different process. So the question that I had in mind kind of would contradict her objection. So I can't ask it. I actually had a question about the previous process, but I think it would be an inappropriate.
Yeah, it will be.
Yes. So I'm not going to ask it. But all I want to say also to members of parliament is that I know that, like, I'm a young person, I know that I'm very young, and it's an honor even to be here amongst the top 19, as young as I am in the public service. But I also want to convince you that I'm committed, I'm able, I'm ready, I might be young, but I won't have the capacity to bring dignity to the office of the commissioner if I were to be appointed. Well, I believe that I've got the experience, the attitude, the energy, and innovations, and the ideas to actually reinvigorate our public service leadership in the country. So I don't look at my age to be intimidated. I won't be have the capacity to bring dignity to the office of the commission.
Well,
you know,
thank you very much.
Pardon me, that's the part of the government.
Okay, Ms. Nkolom, thank you very much. Indeed, you are very young and energetic. We will not hold that against you. Thank you very much for participating in this interview. You are now released.
Thank you.